walk through the garden.
When you walk through the garden,
you gotta watch your back.
You gotta watch your back.
Well, I beg your
pardon. Welcome to the On the Wire podcast. My guest today is Patrick Wardle of SYNAC, who is a prolific security researcher, does a lot of cool stuff on OSX, specifically has released a lot of cool OSX security tools. He's giving a talk this week at Black Hat and also DEF CON, I guess, Patrick, on an interesting variant of the fruit fly malware that you came across recently and did some cool analysis work on. So thanks for your time. I know it's a pretty crazy couple days leading up to all this stuff for you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. It's always great to be on the podcast, and thanks for reaching out. I think this is a kind of interesting piece of Mac malware that has kind of an interesting twist that we'll get about. So just to start, some background, Fruit Fly Variant A was discovered in January by Malwarebytes. Thomas Reed, one of my friends, did a great blog kind of articulating the components of the malware, some of its capabilities, which were interesting, for example, webcam access, and whatnot. And then a few weeks later, one of my friends shared a hash with me of variant B, which was fairly similar to variant A, but at the time was undetected, even though variant A was now being detected by antivirus. So I spent some time digging into it. I guess the interesting approach was that instead of doing a traditional analysis with debuggers and disassemblers, I thought it'd be easier to basically create a custom command and control server and then have the piece of malware in my VM talk to that and just task it and basically see what the malware does. So I didn't know, for example, what or how the malware would respond, for example, when I said execute command number 6.
Yeah.
But I wrote some monitoring tools, some monitoring capabilities, and from that I could then task the malware and quickly and very easily reveal its capabilities by basically just watching what it did in response to my tasking from the custom command and control server.
So is that a tactic that you've used before? I've never really heard of anybody doing that. It's, you know, maybe because it seems like a lot of work.
I'm not sure if it's a novel technique. I'm sure other security researchers or antivirus researchers do that. This piece of malware specifically or seem to be conducive or easy to interface with. For example, it didn't use custom encryption. Its commands were simply integer-based, so you would send it like a 6 or a 12. So actually, this was way simpler than creating or doing a full analysis via debugger disassembly. And I was actually digging around in the malware, and after a few hours, I was looking at the code responsible for processing the command to move the mouse, and I was just like sick of looking at Apple's low-level mouse APIs and trying to figure out what parameter the malware was pushing down. And so I was like, you know what, let me just write a mouse sniffer, send it the mouse command and the subcommand and see what it does. And then very easily I saw, okay, when I give it a 1, it moves the mouse to the XY coordinates. If I give it a 3, it's going to do a double click. If I do a 5, it's going to do a click and then drag. So again, visually observing that turned out to be way simpler than actually reverse engineering it via traditional mechanisms.
Yeah, that sounds like a much easier way to go about it, much less stressful. This malware, like there isn't a wide variety of like OSX malware, like this big body of stuff to look back at the way that there is for Windows. But I remember when the original one was discovered, as you said, in January, and I think I wrote something about it at the time, and there was a kind of a bunch of like old code in it and like, you know, several years old. And I remember Apple, I think, put out a patch at the time for it. And it seemed to be targeting like medical device companies or something like that. What's the difference between that version and this newer version? Is it have any of the same behaviors kind of targeting stuff?
So I'm confident that both variants were written by the same person and likely had the same goals. You touched on a few things. So let's first talk about the age of the malware. So yes, the malware, for example, its core component is an obfuscated Perl script. Perl is rather an archaic language. Variant A had some comments in the code showing that the hacker or malware author had updated it for Yosemite, which came out 4-ish years ago.
Yeah.
So again, showing that the malware was active before that. And then several other indicators do make it appear that this malware has been around probably for 5 or so years. Since it's not targeting a ton of users, it probably has just been flying under the radar. Now, Malwarebytes analysis of the targeting said, yes, they basically saw some infections in biomedical labs. What I was able to do is I figured out that some of the backup command and control servers that were encrypted within the sample I looked at were available for registration. And since the primary command and control servers were offline, I assumed that any victims or infections that were out there that hadn't been cleaned up might be beaconing to this backup server. So I registered it and pointed it at my custom command and control server, and immediately I just got tons of victims connecting. Now, when this malware connects to a command and control server, it provides the username and also the name of the computer, as well as obviously I have the IP address of the client. So what I can do from this, because normally Mac computer names are the user's full first and last name. So for example, if I was infected, you would see an IP address in Hawaii. You would see the username is Patrick, and then the computer name would be Patrick Wardle's MacBook. So with those three pieces of information, you can fairly accurately identify exactly who the victim is.
Right.
So from that, then, I was able to do more analysis on the victims, both geographic analysis and then also just, you know, Googling their names to see who they were. And it was interesting because the majority, about 90% of the victims, were in the U.S. And the victims also appeared to be all just normal users. There were a few people that worked at research labs. There was a few colleges. But overall, it was just normal, everyday people. And this was interesting because normally there's kind of two types of malware. There's nation-state malware, and then there's financially motivated cybercrime malware. And for nation-state malware, you see it targeting things like research facilities, defense contractors, journalists, you know, that kind of stuff. And this malware really didn't look like it was targeting any of that. So I was like, okay, this might be a cyber criminal. But the malware had none of the features that we commonly see, even in Mac malware. For example, it didn't have a keylogger to capture credit card numbers. It wasn't displaying ads, hijacking search pages. It wasn't ransoming files. So really, it had a lot of the features that we see in a surveillance-based nation-state malware, but was targeting victims that cybercrime would. So this, unfortunately, kind of leaves just one other option, which is that I believe this malware was created essentially to spy on everyday people, which is kind of creepy and rather perturbing and rather insidious. Because, yeah, it sucks if someone hacks your computer and steals your credit card or ransoms your files, but like that doesn't impact you emotionally. And you can probably pay the ransom and get your files back.
Yeah.
But if someone's hacking your computer and perhaps turning on your webcam and spying on you, like that's kind of next-level creepiness.
Right.
So, again, I think both variants might have had the same goal. I think Malwarebytes may have just seen certain of the infections that inadvertently hit some people working at research labs. I'm not 100% sure. I can say, though, that law enforcement is involved, and hopefully in the not-too-distant future we'll be able to answer some of these questions 100%.
Okay, cool. That is creepy to see, you know, something like that with that those kind of capabilities just targeting random users for, you know, essentially surveillance purposes.
Yeah,
you know, we're, as you said, we're used to banker trojans and ransomware variants and that kind of stuff and understand what they're after. They're after money, essentially. But this kind of thing, yeah, it's a little, you know, it's like somebody peeking in your window and just, you know, it's weird. So do you have a good idea of how this is being spread, Patrick? Because it doesn't seem like there's any obvious spreading mechanism.
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, we have no insight into that. I talked to Malwarebytes, Apple, and I haven't been told of the infection vector. If I had to guess, though, I would say it's probably something that requires user interaction, which is a good thing. Looking at this malware, it's very feature complete, but it's not incredibly sophisticated. Like, it persists using a known technique. You know, it's not an incredibly complex, elegant, sophisticated piece of malware. So I'd be very surprised if its infection vector was some, like, you know, amazing zero-day exploit. So if I had to guess, probably a malicious email attachment, a trojaned app, maybe an infected website that has a fake pop-up to try to get people to download and install it. Again, these are common trends we see in other Mac malware, so I would be very surprised if this malware spread in a different mechanism.
Yeah, and it's funny to hear you say that, you know, that's good news, but it actually is because, yeah, you know, if somebody has to double-click on an attachment or click on a link to infect themselves, that's a lot better than you know, some silent infection where you're just sitting there, you know, reading the New York Times website or something, and all of a sudden you've got this surveillance software on your machine.
Yeah, exactly. But unfortunately, I saw several hundred users that connected to my command and control server. I didn't interact with these victims in any way. I just logged the connection and then closed that and then handed off the command and control servers and that information to law enforcement because they were very interested. And again, these were U.S. individuals. You know, some of the computers were like family computer, stuff like that. So, but like you said, even if the infection mechanism might not have been that advanced, hundreds of users, and I only registered one or two of the backup command and control servers, and I actually only looked at my specific variant, which was variant B. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are other variants, other command and control servers, and so if we might see this victim number increase. Now, at this time, it seems all the infrastructure command and control servers are offline, so I really think that currently this malware doesn't pose an existing threat to like people who aren't infected. Mm-hmm. And even the people who are still infected, I think it's basically a dormant infection. It's like calling someone whose phone is off, right? Their malware might be connecting out, but you know, I don't think there's anyone tasking that or actively interfacing with that.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, these infections seem to go back a few years. But we didn't hear anything about it until, you know, early this year. Do you have any like theories or wild speculation on why that might be? I mean, I know it's pretty. There's a broad range of possibilities there.
I think the answer is simple. I don't have conclusive proof for this, but you know, it's basically a custom piece of malware that is not targeting a massive number of victims. Mac security tools, especially the antivirus products, are very, in my opinion, weak. So they don't do a good job proactively detecting these threats. So my guess is a hacker designed this malware to spy on people, deployed it, and just because there isn't a lot of Mac security software out there that can generically detect new threats, it basically just flew under the radar. So to me, that is not, yes, it's worrisome, it's bothersome, but it's really not that surprising, unfortunately. And that's one of the reasons why I spend a lot of time creating these free Mac security tools, and they're all free, so I really this doesn't sound like a sales pitch. But what my tools do is they focus on malicious behaviors versus looking for specific static signatures. So for the tool Oversight, it'll basically tell you anytime someone turns on the webcam or the mic. So it will, for example, alert you when Skype is using the webcam. But also, you know, if you step away from your computer, say you're walking around your room naked or something, and you come back to your computer, and there was some malware that turned on the webcam to record you, Oversight will alert you of that.
Right.
So I think I wouldn't really say it's a wake-up call because the security and antivirus community already knows this. And there's always a trade-off between false positives and how much users are going to click allow anyways. But I think this is a great example where we really need to focus on detecting these malicious actions or activities, these behaviors, versus looking for static signatures. Because again, this malware is not incredibly sophisticated. Once you know about it, it's very easy to detect. But if you're looking for its generic malicious behaviors, connecting out to some random IP address, turning on the webcam, persisting an unsigned launch agent, these things are very blatantly odd behaviors. So that's, again, why I focus on tools that kind of detect these behaviors. So I think that's maybe, hopefully, you know, the AV industry or security kind of go down that route a little more.
Yeah, you have the ransomware tool that does that as well, right? It kind of looks for, if I remember right, untrusted processes that are like rapidly encrypting files and then says, this shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect example, right? Like, what? So like, let's alert the user. Okay, some users are still going to click allow, but hopefully there's a few users who block it or send me an email, and then we can proactively detect these threats before they infect mass number of users or, you know, perhaps are, you know, out in the wild for 5 or even 10 years.
Yeah. And the thing about like this not being noticed for a while, I think you're probably right, because it wasn't hitting, you know, as you said, high profile targets like journalists or, you know,
exactly,
activists or somebody like that who might then make some noise about it and say, hey, listen, here's something going on, and then turn it into, you know, a big kind of incident.
Yeah, exactly. And there are advanced Mac security tools. I think some of the next generation, you know, like CrowdStrike, I know, has some cool Mac capabilities. But those are going to be deployed in enterprises and, you know, that stuff. So normal Mac users are unfortunately rather overconfident in the security of their Macs. And I think Apple is somewhat to blame for this. But then also, they're not going to be running these third-party security tools. So they're a very easy target, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's right. You're right about that. I've been a Mac user for probably, I don't know, 6 or 7, 8 years, something like that. And definitely before I had a Mac, I was like, oh, man, you know, what's the big deal? They're not that great. I love it now. I would have a hard time going back to Windows. But there's definitely like kind of a false sense of security. Like, you know, I write about malware and hackers for a living. And, you know, I look at all these attacks and I'm like, yeah, I don't really need to worry about that. I've got a MacBook and an iPhone. I'm all set. You know, which is not probably not the best way I should be going through life, honestly.
Yeah, no, and I think, unfortunately, like you said, a lot of people have that mentality, and that's ultimately detrimental because then they might not be as cautious when browsing the web or clicking on email attachments or perhaps not installing these free third-party security products. They don't think they need them.
Yeah, and, you know, I think part of that, a lot of people have figured, well, the user base for OS X is as large as Windows, and it still isn't. So the attacker base isn't as interested in that that target population. But I think that began to change several years ago. And I think it's definitely that change has happened now, you know, whether it's targeted attacks or malware like Fruit Fly or things like that. I think, you know, kind of that era of attackers not being interested in a small target population is probably over.
Yeah, and I think that's also kind of, it depends on how you're being targeted, like you said. You know, if you're a journalist or an activist, it doesn't matter what you're using, nation state people are going to target you.
Yeah.
If there's a malicious adversary, a hacker that's wanting to just spy on people, like, he doesn't need hundreds of thousands of victims. Like, a few hundred or even a thousand, I think, for him would be fine. And like you said, a lot of people are starting to use Macs. So I think, you know, I don't know if we'll ever see this massive explosion of Mac malware. We are seeing a lot more Mac adware, but yeah, like you said, it's a natural, you know, pivot for a lot of malware authors to be like, okay, we hack Windows, let's now, you know, hack Macs. I have no data to back this up, but also Macs are a little more expensive, so Mac users might have a little more disposable income. So especially for ransomware, if I'm writing ransomware, I'm going to be targeting Macs. I think they're a softer target. I think Mac users are more naive, and yeah, they might have more money. So,
right.
Again, I will never do that, but I'm saying theoretically, hypothetically speaking.
Right. All right, Patrick, listen, man, thanks a lot. It's always good to catch up with you, and I appreciate you doing this on a busy week. And I would encourage everybody to go see Patrick's talk. I think it's on Wednesday at Black Hat, and then you said you're doing it again at DEF CON later in the week?
Yeah, so it's going to be 5:05 p.m. on Black Hat, so a little later in the day, but love to see some of you there. And then also on Friday morning, I believe, around 10 at DEF CON. So yeah, always stoked to share this research. And again, I really think that it's important for us to realize that there are these rather insidious, you know, threats out there that are targeting, you know, perhaps our Macs or the Macs of our families and friends. So just good to be aware of that. And yeah, stay safe out there.
For sure. All right, Patrick, thanks a lot, man. And I look forward to seeing the talk in a couple days in Vegas.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Chat later.
Take care.
When you walk through the garden,
when you walk through the garden,
you gotta watch your back.